Thank you for being here, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, no class Labor Day, so there's no class next week. We'll take the time off. We are starting the Kings of Judah. We've gone through the Kings of Israel up until 722 BC, and now it's time on page 125 to 133 to go through the Kings of Judah. The framework book is online on Generation Word. Find the books, click it, whole PDF will just open right up for you. And I decided to quit. We'll start with Rehoboam, Solomon's son, 930, and we'll go up to Hezekiah in 686. The kingdom of Judah will fall, 586, 587 with the Babylonians. And so I think what we'll do is pick up with, after Hezekiah, his son Manasseh, or Amos, and then, next week, and go up. I call it in the framework book, it's called The Life and Times of Jeremiah, or Jeremiah to Jesus, or something like that, because that's when Jeremiah starts in right after Hezekiah. So we'll go through this. There's, on your notes, you can see there's 20 kings of Judah, and we're going to be covering 13 of them tonight, covering the years 930 to 686 BC. On the framework book right here, the first thing that you've got there is a chart, and I'll flip through this and read through, have some supplements here to go through this. Right here, here's all the kings of Judah. We'll go from Rehoboam down to Hezekiah tonight, and then Manasseh and Ammon. And this is some exciting times here. Hezekiah is going to be dealing with the Assyrians. Now, he'll be reigning 715 to 686. And if you remember, northern Israel fell. They were conquered by the Assyrians in 722. So right before Hezekiah, he'll be dealing with the Assyrians because they're moving further south into his country. But they have just fallen. So we'll kind of play catch up with what we've done the last 2 weeks with Israel. We'll run through those same years up to the Assyrian Empire. And then the Assyria will start to decline as Babylon starts to rise, and that's going to be up through this time period during Jeremiah's time. But we start with Rehoboam, and I've tried to give you a list right there. I've got a nice chart here for like this for you to kind of see the names, just kind of keep track, because they all have special significance, special events. But when you start saying Rehoboam, Zechariah, Abijah, Asa, they all start sounding the same. The first thing we've got here is Rehoboam, and we know the story. David had 12 tribes united. Solomon took over, built the temple, spent about 20 years building, and then the next 20 years was in debt and got misled by foreign philosophies and trying to figure out how he's going to get out of debt, taxing the people, pretty much frustrating the people so much that they wanted relief. And Rehoboam, his son, had a chance to make some adjustments. He could listen to the wiser, older people, says, yeah, guy, you've got to step the taxation back, and these people will follow you. His young people says, no, you tell them that your little finger is thicker than your father Solomon's thigh. And so then he went, yeah, that sounds tough. He went like, a big, tough guy. And they said, okay, we're leaving. And they split off, and that had a civil war, and that's where he got the kingdom of Israel to the north. Rehoboam's mother, because, he's Solomon's son, was an Ammonite. So his mother was not even Jewish, which, again, is interesting because David's grandmother was Ruth, who's a Moabite. David had Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, who was Uriah the Hittite. Now, was she Jewish or was she Hittite? That makes Solomon maybe part Hittite or at least an eighth Moab. And now his mother is an Ammonite, or his wife is an Ammonite. So poor Rehoboam, he's more Gentile than he is Jewish. If you count Ruth, you throw in Bathsheba, and now you got Ammonite. Nonetheless, the decline of the nation of Judah continued as the high places, Baal stones, and Asherah poles were set up. I've got some pictures I could show you. I didn't put them in my list tonight. Of temples, that shrines that they've uncovered that were covered up by Hezekiah or by Josiah when they try to snuff out this idol worship. But the people are worshiping outside of the temple. God's vision was for the people to worship him in a structured way on the Temple Mount with a priesthood. And it was all for teaching, it was all for communicating the truth. It wasn't for just figuring out your own way. Everybody worships God the way they wanted to. That was why the law of Moses, the Levitical law, the tabernacle, the temple was all so structured. Because you go off and you just start having, you know, we do it today, just start having church services being spiritual. And how do you feel about God? Well, you're just making religion up. You're just making Christianity up. And that's why it's so important to teach the Bible. And that's what they're supposed to be doing. But instead of teaching the Bible, they're still very religious. They're still very spiritual. They're still offering sacrifices. But it's at high places that are built, you know, wherever they want to build them. Baal stones, which is a stone set up to represent Baal, the storm god, the fertility god. And Asherah poles, those would be some kind of like totem poles, carved images. That would be Baal's wife in the spiritual sense were set up. Worship at high places included worship of Yahweh. They'd still worship Yahweh, but it would be like going to church and being a believer in Jesus Christ, but then teaching things that were contrary to what Jesus taught. Like, you know, it'd be like, well, salvation comes from doing good works. You know, if you do enough good things, you get to go to heaven. And Jesus gave us an example. Well, Jesus gave us an example. Jesus is real. Jesus came. But Jesus' message and the message of the New Testament is not, if you do enough good deeds, you get to go to heaven. But if you don't follow the scriptures, you're going to end up saying something like, you're going to end up believing that. And so they worshiped Yahweh just like many churches with their rainbow flags are worshiping Jesus. But you're not worshiping Jesus. It's moving in some kind of demonic manifestation is coming because Yahweh's not going to show up. He's not going to show up except in his temple, before his altar, with his priesthood, with the offerings he's required. And that's the only way Yahweh's going to show up. So you can say Yahweh, but they weren't. But without the guidance of the priests or the rituals of the prescribed in the law of Moses. Independent worship centers began to reflect the surrounding pagan cultures. Now watch this. I've got this written here. I got this copied out. There's like several places when you go through 1 Kings, it says this. And it's shocking. We're talking about Solomon's son, Rehoboam. We're talking about David's grandson and the temple and the religious services that the priests are supposed to be officiating. During Rehoboam's day, worship even began to include male shrine prostitutes. Well, what's that mean? Well, there's your reference, 1 Kings 14, and I've got it right here, 1 Kings 14, 23 through 24. This is what it says. For they also built for themselves high places and pillars and Asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there were also male cult prostitutes in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations that the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. So if he drove out the Canaanites because they were doing this and brought Israel and says, now do it this way, and Israel starts doing it like the Canaanites, where do you think our story is going to end up? The Lord is going to drive out his people out of the land also. But I mean, I don't want you to say, you know, just imagine this or think about this, because that would be very perverted. But what does this mean? Also, male cult prostitutes in the land. I mean, and you go, they're worshiping their god through prostitution, but it's not prostitutes like you'd think of female prostitutes. They're male religious cultish prostitutes, so they're making communication with their god through male prostitutes, which is like, I mean, why isn't this place, you know, flooded or nuke like Sodom already? We've still got it. We got to go all the way down to 586 yet. We still got four centuries to go here. Anyway, that's Rehoboam's day. Now, here's some things Rehoboam did. First, he does fortify these cities. Here's Jerusalem. So northern Israel up here. He fortified these cities, and that's going to be, you know, protect from the Philistines, protect from Egypt, protect attacks from the south. Those are the cities he fortifies. He does, because of the sin, the Pharaoh from Egypt, Shishak, attacks Jerusalem, and they can't stop him, and he takes all the temple treasure. He goes into the temple, takes the temple treasure back to Egypt. The royal treasure goes into the palace, takes all the treasure that Solomon had accumulated, that David accumulated. It all goes back to Egypt. He takes the Solomon's gold shield. Solomon had made gold shields, and through his palace, as you'd walk in, they would have rows of gold shields that would be very intimidating. He goes, that is very nice, and I'll take those. And so again, here's just Rehoboam's mother was from Moab. So that is a little bit about Rehoboam. Now, the next king coming after that is Abijah from 9:13 to 9:10, Abijah's going to be the king. He's going to defeat. There's going to be a war. Huge army. You can read about this in 2 Chronicles. Israel's going to bring down, because they're still fighting over this battle. That civil war still going on between Israel and Judah. They meet just north of Jerusalem at this mountain right here, this high place right there. And he gets surrounded in front and the back, and he ends up being delivered and sends the people back home. And that would be Abijah. So Maacah is his wife, okay, while he was ruling in Israel. Abijah does capture Bethel, which is just across the border, that, you know, Dan to Bethel, where is where the golden calf. So he does cross over and capture their southern shrine there from Jeroboam. Next, in 9:10, Asa becomes king. He removed the high place. Now you're going to go through a period of kings that are going to be trying to bring the people back. Some kings realize, and many times the priests are going to step up and bring guidance. But Asa is going to remove the high place of the foreign altars, meaning those are altars for gods from other countries, and smashed Baal stones and cut down the Asherah poles, again, those pillars. Asa had a peace and prosperity. He built the fortified cities. Again, the good kings seem to be fortifying and protecting the country. Inspired by the prophet Azariah, Asa repaired the temple of the Lord. Look again, we're not that far from 9:10. David became king in 1000. He was king 1010. Solomon became king, you know, like 950, 930. But it already says the prophet has to come and say, you need to restore, rebuild the temple of God. So they're making corrections, repairing the temple of God. It's going to be going throughout this period is the temple keeps going into decline. They've got other things they're more interested in. We think that the temple would be this holy place that's immaculate, that has a lot of attention, and it was at different times. Especially in the New Testament, I think they're very focused on it. But during this time, it's like it gets run down. They're in Josiah's day, coming up next week, we're going to see that they lose the Bible. They lose the book of Deuteronomy, and they find they're cleaning out the temple and be like cleaning out a church, and they find a Bible. They go, look at this. Here's a Bible. It tells us exactly who God is. And they were shocked to find out what it is. So it's amazing how dark this place gets. He repaired the temple, continued to cleanse the land of idols. He removed the queen mother, Maacah, from her throne. So his mother was Maacah, and she was very bad, and burnt her Asherah or Asherah poles in the Kidron Valley. So down here in the Kidron Valley, that's going to be used, apparently, was for junk. Also, the Hinnom Valley is going to be used for trash. But he takes her Asherah poles, cuts them down, his mother's Asherah poles, and burns them in the Kidron Valley. Many of the tribes of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon from the kingdom of Israel moved to Judah. So people are seeing how disastrous it is in northern Israel, because again, we're 9:10, things are deteriorating quickly, and they start moving into Judah. This is going to be a practice throughout these years of people leaving Israel and coming into Judah because it's more stable, and they have the tabernacle or the temple there. When this takes place, Asa made a treaty with Ben-Hadad of Aram when Baasha, the king of Israel, fortified the border. So because this is happening, and I've got a map coming up here to show you. Because this is happening, here's a real quick Mediterranean Sea, Galilee, Jordan River, Dead Sea. Here's Jerusalem. Here's your border, Israel, Judah right here. Bethel is right about here. The people are coming down into Judah. This is going to go all the way up through Hezekiah's time. People are going to be fleeing here, especially when they get pressure here. And so Baasha comes up, the king, that this time we studied him last couple weeks, and he is going to come down. Asa, this king, goes up to Aram. This would be the kingdom up here, a little bit further north than right here. Aram, Assyria's over here. Aram is up in, you know, Syria. He goes up to Ben-Hadad of Aram when Baasha, king of Israel, fortified the border with Judah to prevent any more people from leaving Israel and going into Judah. The prophet rebuked Asa for going to Aram. So this guy, king of Judah, goes up to Aram and says, hey, I'll pay you if you invade these guys from the north so that I can have this border open so people can come down across here. Border issues, even back then. I mean, it's exactly very similar, at least. The prophet Hanani rebuked Asa for going to Aram for help. Asa imprisoned the prophet. You're going to see this. A lot of these kings are going to be, if a prophet comes up with a word from God, they can get the priesthood corrupted with false worship, but a prophet will arise, and many times that prophet comes right out of the priesthood. They're a priest or a Levite that's doing the prophesying. Jeremiah was a priest. And he prophesies that you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't be going getting foreign help to invade the people of God. Well, instead of listening, Asa imprisoned the prophet and began to then mistreat the people of Judah. He was inflicted with a severe foot disease in his 39th year, and he died in his 41st year. And so that is the king Asa. And here is a map of him. There's that border I tried to draw there. He's going up to Damascus. Ben-Hadad comes down and takes Dan, these cities right here, Abel, Beth, Maacah, all the way down, and Kinnereth, which is right there, part of the Sea of Galilee, that part right there. Baasa fortifies the border right there. That's what we just read about there in Asa. Now, after Asa, you have Jehoshaphat, and he began to reign with his father. Sometimes they have co-reigns. They're going to, sometimes the years, you can't just add all the years up, because some king may reign for 40 years, and then the next son reigns for 32 years. But then when you add the numbers up, it only figures out to be, 45 years. But that's because they're doubling up. And for example, he began to reign with his father in 872. He followed God. This is Jehoshaphat. This is a story everybody knows. If you go to church, you go to Sunday school, this is a story that's been told to you about. He's the one that puts the band out in front of the military, and they go sing songs instead of, and everybody loves that for praise and worship. But anyway, that's the only story they know. He followed God and stationed troops in the fortified cities. Once again, fortifies the land, put garrisons in cities his father had captured. Jehoshaphat then sends officials and Levites throughout the land of Judah to teach the book. See right here, teach the book of the law. So that's basically teach them Deuteronomy. Here's how you are to live. And because they were teaching, because he emphasized the teaching ministry to the people, because they're following foreign gods. They've got their own high places, Asherah poles, Baal, and they got their own foreign philosophy. That's what brought Solomon down. He goes off and teaches them the book of Deuteronomy. And because of that, it says right here, the fear of the Lord fell on the kingdoms around Judah, including the Philistines, who brought gifts, and the Arabs, who brought Jehoshaphat 7,000 rams, 7,000 goats, when Ahab, king of Israel. Okay, so that's the good part about that. Now, notice right here, King Ahab. You recognize the name King Ahab. The wicked king married the Phoenician princess Jezebel. That's going on up north in northern Israel. And this is where we talked about it last time. Ahab, right around 853, Ahab disguised himself as a foot soldier and was killed in battle. Jehoshaphat went up to join him in battle, and he wore his royal robes. Ahab says, I'm going to go as disguised, and a random arrow ends up piercing his armor and killing Ahab. Jehoshaphat then flees. Jehoshaphat returns safely, but was rebuked by the prophet Jehu. Now, that's not Jehu, the northern king. Jehoshaphat appointed then judges from, he doesn't kill him, he listens to him. He appoints judges from Beersheba to the hill country of Ephraim. Beersheba is down here, Abraham's city down here, from Beersheba up to Ephraim, which is pushing up into this area of Israel. And he appointed judges to oversee and make decisions and help the people follow the law that he was teaching them. There's where Jehoshaphat declared a fast. Okay, the Moabites and the Ammonites. Moabites and Ammonites, these are the Edomites, Moabites and Ammonites, they invade the land. They're coming, and they get a message. It's like, what do we do? A Levite, Jehaziel, a Levite, prophesied. Notice the pattern. You're going to have a man, he's going to be a priest or Levite, and he's going to have a word from God. It's going to be divine revelation, giving the king information. That's the way the system's set up. Prophesied that the battle was God's, that this battle is the Lord's. And there would be deliverance if the people marched out to face the enemy. Jehoshaphat consulted the people, then appointed men to march in front of the army and to sing praise to the Lord. Moab and Ammon, when they start to hear that singing, they turned on each other, and Judah then, the Ammon and Moab, the plundered or destroyed each other. And then they spent 3 days, Judah spent 3 days carrying off the plunder from their camp. So that's basically Jehoshaphat. He followed God all of his days. There's one more incident that he got in line with Ahab's son, Ahaziah. Now remember, Ahab's son, Ahaziah, and another son, Joram. They're coming back in our stories. Jehoshaphat had tried to work with Ahab. Ahab gets killed. Now he's working with Ahaz, the son, in northern Israel, and they come up with a scheme, a plan, a business proposal that they're going to build a bunch of ships and send ships over to Tarshish, which is Spain. They're going to sail all the way across the Mediterranean Sea to Tarshish and start trading because the Canaanites were doing this. The people of Tyre and Lebanon are doing this. And so they're going to do this. But God sends a prophet, Eliezer, told him that because he had made an alliance with wicked Ahaziah, the ships would never sail. And then a storm came up and broke the ships apart, and he never got to do that trading deal. Now, after him, it's going to get more interesting. If you're bored, I appreciate your patience. After Jehoshaphat comes his son Jehoram, Jehoshaphat's son. Now, here we go. You like soap operas, maybe? I mean, I didn't really like soap operas. I got into General Hospital back when Luke was in it, back in the 80s, because Tony was watching. And I remember the 60s, Dark Shadows with Barnabas Collins. And that's my soap opera, so I don't know much about soap operas. But this would make a great movie. It's silly. It's stupid. It's wicked. It's disturbing. Okay, you know Northern Israel. Northern Israel, Omri had a son named Ahab. Ahab marries the princess from Lebanon. She's a Baal worshiper, brings her down, and they have Baal worship throughout here. That brings Elijah into the picture. They kill the prophets of Baal. They have the fire come down. The whole thing. They've got two sons. Jezebel and Ahab have two sons, Ahaziah and Joram. But they also had a little girl. Jehoram, Jehoshaphat's son, married Athaliah. Athaliah. It's Athaliah. I like to say Athaliah, but the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So Jezebel from Lebanon, the Baal worshiper, married the wicked king Ahab. Their daughter, Athaliah, marries the son of in David's line. So she's now living in a palace. You've got someone, a Baal worshiper from northern Israel who's from Phoenicia, living in the palace of David, of Solomon. She's the queen of Judah. She's the queen of God's people who are struggling to focus on the book of Deuteronomy. Jeroboam reigned like a king of Israel, and not like the kings of Judah. Now, this comes up several times. It makes this statement. But he killed his brothers. Anyone else that could be heir to the throne, he kills them. Now, that's going to happen a couple more times in this story. Edom and Libnah rebelled against Judah at this time and set up their own kings. The prophet Elijah, who had already been taken to heaven, now this is in the text of Scripture, he had already been taken to heaven, but before he died, it seems like the last year before he died, he wrote a letter prophesying to Jehoram, chewing him out for what he was going to do, but he wrote the letter before it happened, and then he went into heaven. So that's recorded in the Scriptures for having killed his brothers. Now, Egypt invades Judah. They carried off palace treasures. The Philistines, the Arabs invaded. Invaded Judah, the palace, and killed all of Jehoram's sons. So his brothers are killed. His sons were killed. Only Ahaziah, the youngest son of Athaliah, was alive. Now, these guys are going to have more than one wife. So these sons may be the sons of the king, but they may come from a different wife, a different mother. So all the sons and all the brothers are dead except Ahaziah, who is the son of Athaliah, and Jehoram. I wonder how that worked out. His plane went down one Christmas during in a trip, and anyone that was otherwise a potential heir to the throne then committed suicide and or something. Now, they just slaughtered him, but in our modern times we have plane crashes, suicides, bombs, different things. Okay, so there's only one son left. Ahaziah was left. Jehoram died a painful, incurable disease of the bowels as prophesied in the letter that Elijah wrote him, leaving mother Athaliah and her son Ahaz as king. Now, if you cheat and look ahead after the king, who comes after, who becomes king after Ahaz? Look at number 7. Who becomes king after Ahaz? What? Athaliah. Wait, you can't be king. You're a queen. You're not even from Israel. You're not. What? What is okay? Well, here the story's getting good. Okay. Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, Jezebel and Ahab's daughter, became king at the age of 22. His mother encouraged him to do wrong. Well, of course, she's a Baal worshiper. And she has no concept of Yahweh, no concept of the priesthood of Israel, of Judah, no respect for King David. And she does not know the Lord. Encouraged him to do wrong, and the house of Ahab in Israel became his advisor. So who's giving him advice? While these guys are collapsing and being chewed out by Elijah, they're advising the king of Judah because their sister is the queen mother. Okay, now during this time, Uncle Joram, the king of Israel, was injured in a war against Hazael of the Arameans. We talked about this. So he goes up here, he gets shot, he comes back, he's injured, and that's where he's trying to get some information. And that is, remember, General Jehu was anointed. A prophet comes across here, anoints Jehu, the general, to be the king. He comes over and pursues. This is the same story we saw, but now Ahaziah, he's going to reign for 1 year. He's going to be king of Judah for 1 year. Jehu comes back and he kills King Joram of Israel when he came out to meet him. He then goes to Jezreel and has Jezebel, the queen mother in Israel, Athaliah's mom, pushed out the window, and continues on, finds Ahaziah over in a city and has him killed. So he kills the son of Athaliah. So Athaliah now, her son is dead. And so what she does, back in Jerusalem, the queen mother, Athaliah, then destroys the whole royal family of Judah. Any son of David that was alive, she has them killed. So the line of David is gone. It's done, we think. But Ahaziah's sister, this king whose mother was Jezebel, his sister, Jehoram's daughter and Jehoshaphat's granddaughter, had not taken, I'm reading it wrong, but she took Ahaziah's one-year-old son, Joash, who's a baby, and hides him with a nurse in a room while they're slaughtering the royal family. And so he stays hidden for 6 years. Now, Jehoshaphat is going to end up marrying the priest named Jehoiada. Jehoiada is going to help protect the baby Joash for the next 6 years. And then when he's 7 years old, right around the time, he's going to send an announcement to all the elites, all the leaders, hey, we got a way out of this. I have the royal son. They're all dead, not this one. And he brings him out, well, that's coming up right here, and presents him to the nation. So we got a hero coming, Joash, we hope. We really hope we have another David arise. All right, so here's, after her son, Ahaziah is killed after 1 year. She's killed all of her brothers, all of his brothers, all of their children have been killed somewhere or other. So the only thing left of royalty is Jezebel's daughter, Athaliah, is reigning in the kingdom of Judah, and she reigns for 6 years. While Prince Joash of the line of David was hidden. In the 7th year, Joash was 8 years old. The priest Jehoiada brought out the king's son and presented him at the pillar of the temple. So there's, in the front of the temple, there's two big pillars called Jachin and Boaz. And I think that's the ones they're talking about. There'd be one of the pillars, probably the one on the right side, the north side. They would stand him, and that would be like the royal place. And he introduces him. And when Athaliah sees this and finds out what's going on in the Temple Mount, that they've actually got a son of David that they were crowning king, she hollers, "Treason! Treason!" It's all recorded in Scripture, which is really funny because you've got the Phoenician granddaughter through Israel, the Baal worshiper who's killed the royal family of Judah, who's now been reigning for 6 years. It's her country. She's calling treason, treason, because the priest has anointed the son of David to be king of Judah. But she was struck down on the palace grounds. The people then tore down the temple of Baal in Jerusalem. So she had a temple of Baal built and killed the priests of Baal. So just what Elijah done on Mount Carmel, they repeat the process here. Now here is for your, this is on the bottom of your notes, just because I put this together today so that you could see this. And I hope it helps. I hope you enjoy this. The Phoenician king was Ethbaal, or Ethobaal the first. He was the king of Tyre. He has a son named Baal Esher the second, who's going to be king of Tyre or Sidon after him. But he also has a daughter named Jezebel. Jezebel marries Ahab, the son of Omri, the king of Israel. Ahab and Jezebel have three children that are recorded. Ahaziah, this is the northern king, and Jehoram. We talked about them last week. Also have a daughter named Athaliah. Now, Omri's reigning while Asa was reigning in Judah about the same time. Jehoshaphat was reigning about the same time Ahab was. In fact, he was there the day Ahab died. And then Jehoshaphat went to make ships with Ahaziah, and those ships got destroyed. And after Jehoshaphat, Jehoram becomes king, and Jehoram marries Ahaziah and Jehoram's, notice the names, Jehoram, it's not a mistake. Jehoram marries Ahaziah and Joram's sister, Athaliah. They have a son named Ahaziah. Now, Ahaziah is going to have some sons. These other sons are all killed by Athaliah when she finds out that Ahaziah is dead and that she's now got a problem with the royalty here and she's going to get this. When her son here dies, sorry, when Athaliah finds out her son Ahaziah, see, Ahaziah here, Jehoram here, Jehoram here, that just adds to the confusion. That's not a mistake. I may make a mistake, but that's not the mistake. When she finds out her son is dead, she kills all these sons, so no one else is left, but this one gets hidden. Gets hidden by Ahaziah's sister, Jehoshabeath, or Jehosheba. I'll just say Jehosheba. That's what you guys have been saying, right? You're like, why can't the guy speak? Okay. So anyway, Ahaziah, who's died, and his mother is Athaliah, she apparently, Jehosheba, probably has got a different mother. So she's not related to Athaliah, but they are related to Jehoram. He's dead. These guys are dead. She takes this son, a one-year-old, and hides him and lets Jehoiada, the priest, know about it. They help protect him for his whole life. And now Jehoiada is going to present him at the temple. Now, don't forget this. Jehoiada is the priest, is going to marry Jehosheba. Okay? That Jehosheba, who saved Joash and gave it to Jehoiada, they marry each other, and they have a son named Zechariah. He's going to be a priest and a prophet. Okay, so Joash's aunt saves him and gives him to the priest who she marries. And now Joash, when he's 8 years old, is going to be anointed king. All right. Here are some details. This is Joram and Ahaziah versus Hazael. This is what we saw last week. They go to battle. Jehoram gets injured, comes back, dies. Jehu gets anointed, comes across here, pushes Jezreel out, kills Ahaziah up there in Megiddo. Now, here's our young boy. Here's the hero of our story, we hope. We are looking for a hero. Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. Joash restored the temple. Now remember, these kings are doing things, but many times they're following the priest, or they're following a prophet, or they're following the foreign king, or they're following a false prophet, So we'll give him credit, but most likely the high priest Jehoiada is instigating a lot of this. So he restores the temple. Judah followed the Lord during the time of the life of the priest Jehoiada. So as long as Jehoiada is alive, things are fine. But when Jehoiada died, the officials of Jerusalem led Joash and the land back to Asherah poles. So there's one guy holding this whole thing together. That was the priest. His son, Zechariah, when Zechariah, son of Berechiah, you've heard this name before, and you've heard it from the mouth of Jesus, and you don't know what it means, but I'll tell you. When Jehoiada and Jehosheba's son, when Jehoiada dies, he has a son, Zechariah, with his wife, Jehosheba. Zechariah is also a priest, but is also a prophet, the son of Berechiah and the grandson of Jehoiada, see, prophesied of the people, okay, that'd be his son, that'd be his grandson, prophesied to the people concerning their disobedience. Joash had Zechariah stoned in the courtyard of the temple. He's prophesying in the courtyard in front of the temple. You should not be doing this. So the king that was saved by Jehoiada from Athaliah stones him so they can continue to return back to Asherah and Baal worship. Now, this Zechariah that was stoned, killed, is the Zechariah that Jesus mentioned in Luke 11:51. Jesus stops and chews the people out, the scribes, the Pharisees, the rulers, in Jerusalem there, in Luke 11:50-51. He says, so that the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world. Now this is Jesus speaking. He's not speaking in parables. All the blood of the prophets shed since the foundation of the world. And what he's going to say is, all of that is going to come on Jerusalem as guilt in 70 AD. He says, it's coming. This generation is going to suffer. All the wrath is going to be poured out right here on this city because you're doing to me what you've done to all of my prophets from the beginning of time. Now, in the Jewish Bible, the last book in the Jewish Bible is 2 Chronicles. Okay, now that's not the last book in our Bible. We've got them arranged differently, the same context or the same text. But the last book is 2 Chronicles, and that is where this is recorded when Joash has Zechariah killed, stoned, on the Temple Mount, is in the book of 2 Chronicles. And so he says, from the foundation of the world, all the blood of the prophets shed from the foundation of the world may be charged against this generation. He's talking about his generation that crucified him. From the blood of Abel, which puts Abel in the position of a prophet who has had it. We just think about, he had, again, I'm not making fun of this, but I'm putting this together. He had an altar and God accepted his offering, but Cain's he didn't accept. Which appears to mean that Abel was understanding, teaching, prophesying, presenting an offering that reflected what God had told him or God had revealed, and he was sending it back to him. Meaning, it's just like when God says Jesus is the Savior, and you say, yes, I believe Jesus is the Savior, and I will follow the Savior. It's like, well, how did you earn your salvation? I just heard what God said, and I'm accepting and doing what God, I'm just doing. I think, well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to find my own God and find my own way of salvation. It's like, well, okay, now he's not going to look with favor on you because you created something. You're a false prophet. Abel would be a true prophet that was presenting something that God was accepting. So from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. So now you know where he died. He was stoned in the courtyard, but he was stoned in front of the doors between Jacob and Boaz, in front of the pillars and the front door, but then right in front of him would be the altar where they had the sacrifice. So he was stoned right in the area of the bronze basin between the altar and the doors going into the temple. That's where the prophet Zechariah was stoned, according to Jesus. So all the blood from Abel to Zechariah, who has perished between the altar and the sanctuary, yes, I tell you, it will be required of this generation. You will pay the price. Woe to you, lawyers. And that would not lawyers legally, although it would be, that it would be the teachers of the law that held people accountable. For you have taken away the key of knowledge. Remember, we talk about the word of God is truth. And if you take that and present something else, you no longer have the truth, but you've got all these false philosophies. They were the ones that were teaching and judging the people, but they'd taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves into the kingdom, and you have hindered those who were entering. If they were following the truth, but you came in and said, no, let me teach you the right way, you misled them. He says, all just like what happened to Abel and what happened to Zechariah, they were killed because they were presenting the truth, and they were killed by people that opposed it. He says, you're doing the same thing, and all that guilt's going to come on you. So nonetheless, that's where that name Zechariah comes from right here. Joash was saved by Zechariah's grandfather, or father, depending on how you read it. And Zechariah, then, he got stoned by the man who saved him. Okay, the next year, in the spring of 796, Aram invaded Judah and Jerusalem and killed the leaders and sent plunder back to Damascus. Joash was wounded, and his officials killed him in his bed for murdering the priest and the prophet Zechariah. So he ends up, his generation did kill him, but he was invaded. Now again, notice who invaded. Aram invaded, because they're coming all the way down through Israel now, and now they're invading Judah. And you can see the year 796, Israel's going to fall in 722, but they're going through some very stringent times right here. All right, there's that chart again. I just know if I wanted to use it again. After Athaliah is killed, calls out treason, and Joash, the young boy, reigns for 40 years. Then Amaziah replaced his father as king when he was 25. He followed the law of the Lord and his judgment and built up and organized the military. Amaziah paid 3¾ tons of silver and 100,000 for 100,000 soldiers from Israel to fight with them, and a prophet rebuked him. So he's going to pay Israel to come fight with Judah. Amaziah then says, okay, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. He sent them home, the Israeli soldiers that he hired to fight with him, but allowed them to keep the silver because they had made the commitment. He then marched off and defeated the Edomites by himself. But while he was down, he was going down here to fight Edom. Right here, down here, south of the Dead Sea. He hires the soldiers to come down here and fight. The prophet says, no, he sends them back. You can keep the money. I was wrong. I'm going to follow God. We'll fight Edom by ourselves. And he wins. But the men of Israel were so upset for somehow not getting the fight or something. They got paid. They came and they plundered Judean towns and killed 3,000 people. Amaziah carried back the idols of Edom. Okay, why, these things don't make sense. I mean, we got information. Okay, he hires them, sends them back, but pays them. He goes down, the Lord leads him in victory, he defeats Edom. While he's gone, Israel comes down and kills 3,000 people, but the king of Judah decides, wow, they've got a lot of gods down here. So he brings the idols back from Edom back to Judah. Like, well, these will be useful. Well, they didn't help Edom, and began to worship them. Amaziah was rebuked by a prophet, but when he was threatened, the prophet says, I know that God has determined to destroy you because you have done this and have not listened to my counsel. Amaziah then challenged Jehoash, king of Israel, son of Jehoash, and grandson of Jehu. Now we're into Jehu's dynasty. Jehoash then invaded Judah and captured Amaziah at Beth Shemesh. That's where the ark came from, the Philistines. They'd go down out of the hill country and fight in the plains. They went to Jerusalem and tore down part of the walls, Israel did, and took the gold and silver from the temple and hostages from the palace. Amaziah fled to Lachish, but men from Jerusalem pursued him and killed him there. So we're just like disaster after disaster. Now comes Uzziah, followed his father. He was a good king. He reigned for 52 years. Uzziah followed God. Another name for him is Azariah. His fame spread to the border of Egypt. He defeated the Philistines and the Arabs to the south. The powerful Jeroboam II ruled to the north during this time. He had a 40-year reign, very successful. Uzziah supplied his army, over 307,000 men with shields, spears, and helmets, and armor, bows, and sling stones. Uzziah, watch this, Uzziah helped pioneer the concept of the catapult. How do you know that? It says it in 2 Chronicles 26:15. So here it is. 2 Chronicles 26:14. Uzziah prepared, now he's got all kinds of shields and weapons. He's helping help Israel fight battles because he's northern Israel, because he's got so much military power. Uzziah prepared for all the army shields, spears, helmets, well that sounds normal, coats of mail, bows and stones for slinging. Here's a picture of sling stones right there. Those are the Assyrian sling stones. I've got another picture coming here if I hurry. Slings for slinging. In Jerusalem, he made machines invented by skillful men. They had some like skillful engineers that were designing these machines. And what could these machines do? To be on the towers, so they sat on the top of the walls on the towers, and the corners, the towers were on the corners, the corner post of the walls, to shoot arrows and great stones. And his fame spread far, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. So he became stronger and stronger. He's got machines fighting on protecting Israel or protecting Judah. He had many people working in the fields and vineyards in this fertile soil. Around the year 750, Uzziah entered the temple. Here's what in 750, this is his downfall. In 750, he decides, around 750, I'm going to go into the temple and offer incense just like a priest. Now again, you could go in, up the steps into the temple, and there'd be the lampstands on this side, the table of showbread on this side, and then there'd be a little altar for burning incense in front of the curtain, and behind the curtains the Ark of the Covenant. He was going to go in there and burn some incense like a priest. Now for all the things that's happening in Israel, I mean, prophets are getting stoned in front of the temple, you've got male prostitutes running around the city, cultish prostitutes, Uzziah entered the temple in an attempt to burn incense like a priest. Uzziah's anger flared up at the priest who confronted him. The priest says, you can't do this. You don't want to do this. You're violating the principles of the law, the routine. Confronted him in front of the incense altar that's in the holy place, in front of the most holy place. And when he gets there, leprosy broke out on his forehead. Uzziah had to live in a separate house away from the city and the temple, and his son Jotham then had charge of the palace and governed. And here's that detail about Uzziah. He wants to be a priest. Now, Jotham, the next king after Uzziah, Jotham was 25 years old. Uzziah received leprosy, so his son's got to take over. They're going to co-reign. Jotham did what was right. Obviously, your father got struck with leprosy in front of the altar. The people continued in corruption, though. He built up the northern wall of the temple court, and that'd be just to the north. That'd be this wall. If you see this picture right here, that'd be this wall right here, coming from the north, probably where they'd been torn down in a previous battle that we talked about. And the eastern wall of the city of David on the hill. So that eastern wall, this would be the eastern wall of the Temple Mount, but that eastern wall of the city of David would be down into here. And built up towns in the Judean and forts and towers in the wooded areas. The Ammonites were conquered and brought him annual tribute. Jotham walked with God and grew powerful. So Jotham was a good king. Now, I'm going to pass this around quickly. These are replicas. I've got a few real ones, but these are replica bulas. Bulas are that clay seal that you put on when you roll up a scroll, you tie it with a string, you put a piece of clay on it, and press your ring in it, or you roll something in it. Or in this case, here's a sample of a seal right here. It's like a little tool on your desk. You just push your name into it like a stamp. And then when all that paper, papyrus, parchment is gone, the only thing is left is that clay seal. And sometimes it gets burnt in a fire somewhere, like if a building burns. And these are four that have been found. You can open it up and look. These are not real. I've got some real ones downstairs. These are bula. This would be the seal made out of rock and carved by an artist. When you press it into a piece of Play-Doh or clay, you stamp it. That piece of clay is the bula. These would be the bula. Now, what you see right there is we've got four kings coming up right here. All four kings coming up here, they have found bulas. This is Jotham's bula. Uzziah's son, Jotham, that's his bula. That's his name. That's the lion. And again, this is a replica. They've got a real one in the museum. After Jotham is Ahaz. Ahaz becomes king, and when he is 20 years old, he cast idols of Baal and burnt sacrifices in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. And this is why in Josiah's day it becomes a garbage dump. Here's the Kidron Valley. Here's the city of David. Here's the temple. Mount Moriah is up here. The temple sits here. The wall of the city goes around like this, cuts over here, and comes back up something like this. That's the wall of the city. This is the Kidron Valley. The Hinnom Valley comes down and around here. Those two pictures in our kitchen, dining area there, and over in the living room, those are two pictures of the Hinnom Valley. If you look up there, you can see going up that hill, you can see that. And I walked in there, just took some pictures as the sun was setting one night, and it's run down. I mean, but you can see how beautiful it could be. And it was at this time, the Hinnom Valley was very green, very a valley. The Kidron Valley could be very nice. And so down in here, they're going to build. This is where they're going to end up having altars and Asherah poles. And he cast, it says right here, he cast idols of Baal and burned sacrifice in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. The Hinnom Valley, or Ben-Hinnom, the valley of the sons of Hinnom, on the south side of Jerusalem. So it comes down the west, cuts across the south, and joins the Kidron Valley on the south side, including, watch, that bull that you're looking at, Jotham, including sacrificing his sons in the fire. So down, part of the sacrifice down here in this Hinnom Valley was to burn children in the fire, child sacrifice. The Arameans defeated him and took many of the people to Damascus. Now again, this is the Arameans, not the Assyrians. Also, Pekah of Israel, son of Remaliah, killed 120,000 of the soldiers. So he's going to have some conflict with the Arameans and with Pekah. Now, and during this time, Isaiah is on the scene. Isaiah is on the scene now in Israel. And he's here. This is a replica. This was found in a scientific excavation south of Jerusalem. I was going to show pictures of it up here, but I didn't get them put on there where it was found. This is a bulla from a document that Isaiah sealed. This is Isaiah's name is on here. It says Isaiah the prophet. There's one letter missing in the statement, Isaiah the prophet. And what would be missing in English, it'd be Isaiah the prophet. So it'd be like, well, it doesn't say prophet. No, talking about a different guy, Isaiah the prophet. You know, he was making prophets. It's like, well, you can do that if you want to. You can be critical, but it's pretty clear. And that was found by Eliot Motzer in a scientific excavation. And then this is artificial. This is, they just then took that image, and what would the seal have looked like? It would have looked like this. So this is the seal. Now, we don't know. It could have been on a ring. It could have been on a necklace. We don't know what it, but that would represent it. Anyway, Isaiah the prophet is going to come up at this time, Isaiah chapter 7. I'm looking here in Isaiah chapter 7 because it says chapter 7 verse 1, when Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has aligned itself with Ephraim, that means northern Israel. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. So now what we've got here is an actual writing of a prophet communicating what was taking place at this time in Ahaz's time. Ahaz. When the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son, Sher-Jashab, and again, all this, I'd love to teach through this in more detail, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool. I'm going to show you a picture of that upper pool here in just a little bit. On the road to the washerman's field, say to him as he's making a plan on what he's going to do because he's got trouble with Aram and Pekahiah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, he says, say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. In other words, God's saying, listen, Isaiah, go tell him, I've got his back. I'm going to take care of you. Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin of Aram and of the son of Remaliah. Doesn't even use his name. He's just the son of Remaliah, which is different than the son of David. The son of David is an anointed king. The son of Remaliah is, I don't even know who he is, son of Remaliah, somebody. So God's being insulting right there. Aram, he says, and Ephraim, that's northern Israel, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of, they've even got a guy here, is that a T or a J? Jabal, king over it. They've even got a king ready to go who's going to take over Ahaz's place. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says. It will not take place. It will not happen. The head of Aram is Damascus. The head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. And goes through and talks about that. I'd like to read it to you. But right there's an example of Isaiah talking to a king saying, this is what's going to happen. And if you read on, Isaiah says, ask the Lord for a sign. He says, I guarantee this is what God says. Ask me for a sign, any sign, and God will do it. And Ahaz says, I ain't going to ask him for a sign. I ain't going to do that. And he's, okay, I tell you what, then the sign is right here. The sign that he gives him right here, it's this. Then Isaiah says, hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of men? Will you now try the patience of God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. He says, the virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. That will be your sign. And again, that's a fun, that's a prophecy about the birth of Christ, but it also possibly overlays somewhere in that, because then Isaiah is going to have a son that he's going to name after the situation. A lot of situations right there. Nonetheless, Tiglath-Pileser is now arising, and we go to the kings of Assyria. They're going to destroy Jerusalem. In fact, it says, or Israel. He says within 63 years there'll be nothing left of Israel in the north, and that's going to take place. Tiglath-Pileser III is rising. That's the one we saw Jehu on this obelisk last week. And so Ahaz, he tells, as Isaiah says, don't do this thing. You're hiring a razor. He is going to come and he's going to shave the hair off everything on your body. But Ahaz goes up to Assyria and says, around the year 733, and says, why don't you come down and help me? And Tiglath-Pileser says, I certainly will. So he pays him, comes down. Ahaz gave him things from the temple and from the palace. Ahaz shut down the temple of the Lord and removed the furnishings. Instead, he brought back he took measurements. He was up in Damascus meeting with Tiglath-Pileser. He took measurements of an Assyrian altar or an Aramean altar and sent it to Jerusalem so they'd have it built to match that pagan altar by the time he got back. So by the time he gets back, they've got a pagan altar already built matching the one. And of course, Isaiah's upset about that whole thing. Are you still with me here? That's the bula of Hezekiah, or excuse me, Isaiah's bula. There's right here the 2 feet of a fawn right here. That it's broken off right there. There's Ahaz's seal or bula. There's the battle. That's Ahaz of Judah sides with the Assyrians. He goes over to Nineveh and brings them down here. That's a story coming up there. These are the kings of Assyria. So here we are. Tiglath-Pileser III. Coming is Salmaneser V, Sargon II, and Sennacherib. All right? And then Esarhaddon is going to kill his father Sennacherib, and we're going to get into that here very quickly. This is now Tiglath-Pileser, like we showed you right here. Tiglath-Pileser comes out of Assyria and comes down and does what Ahaz wants him to, and this is what happens to the Arameans. This is the destruction of the Arameans. Tiglath-Pileser versus the Arameans because Ahaz got him involved. They're carrying off their idols. Notice the helmet. See the helmets right here? Here's a better picture maybe. There. You see the helmets? Those are Assyrian helmets. Those are the gods. When you talk about the gods of the Arameans, those are the gods they were worshiping. And this is happening partly because of Ahaz. These are dead bodies that are stacked up. That's a battle scene. That's an Assyrian helmet in the British Museum. I saw it in the British Museum. This is now invasion against Ahaz. Now, the Arameans come down. Samaria comes down. They come in. That's when he goes to get some help. Now, Hezekiah, one of the sons Ahaziah did not sacrifice in the fire, he ends up trying to make things right. Hezekiah, he destroyed the high places, cut down the Asherah poles. Watch this. Are you still listening? Even crushed the bronze snake Moses had made. Remember, their snakes were biting him, and God had Moses hammer out or make a bronze serpent they could look at. If they looked at the serpent on the pole, they would be healed. It's still here. By 715 BC, it's still there, but they're worshiping it like a cult idol. So Hezekiah says, no, get rid of this. What a great tragedy for archaeological discoveries. But anyway, he got rid of it. The priests and Levites were reorganized. He gets things going. He invited the whole land, including northern Israel, to come down and celebrate the Passover. Because of so many problems going on up in northern Israel, I'll leave this map right here. People are coming down in droves. This is the Kidron Valley, Hinnom Valley, City of David. This is the wall. They're going to build, Hezekiah has to build the wall out like this because there's so many people coming into Jerusalem. So this right here, this wall, we can see it. I've got a picture right here. I don't think I've got one in my slides right here. That's Hezekiah's wall. That's that wall. We can see it right there. I got so many things to show you here. But he builds that wall. He's also going to have the Gihon Springs right here because he's got to get water over this side of the city. He's going to tunnel, cut through the bedrock, and have a pool of water on this side of the city so the people can get water on both sides because there's rolling hills and things through there. So he's getting ready. But now, in 701, Sennacherib, one of the Sargon's son, this is Sargon. I got a picture coming up here to show you. This is Sargon and his son Sennacherib. This is images. That's the actual pictures of them. I mean, it's actual engravings of them. Sennacherib is going to come down and invade Judah. He's going to take out all the fortified cities. All the fortified cities. This is Hezekiah inviting everybody to come down for the Passover. This is Assyria attacks Judah. Sennacherib comes down, and throughout this land of Israel, or Judah, the southern kingdom. See, Israel's gone now. Israel's already fallen. So this is already occupied by Gentiles intermarrying with Jewish people. This is all Assyrian territory. So Assyria has come down, and they're taking all of the fortified cities that have been destroyed. They're fighting a battle at Lachish right here. And I'm going to show you some things at Lachish. Sennacherib the king, the Assyrian king, the son of Sargon, is fighting right here with his troops. And he's got one city left. There's one city left, and that is the city of Jerusalem. And it's 701 B.C. These are the cities whose gods failed, because I'm going to read to you something. I don't really have time. Right here in, oh boy, I know. Look, in 2 Kings chapter 19, Sennacherib sends a messenger. He sends three people to talk with him, talk at the wall of to Hezekiah at the waterman's field, including Rabshakeh. And Rabshakeh is... it means like cupbearer. It's like what Nehemiah was. He's not a warrior. He's a linguist. He knows the languages. So he's reading and pronouncing a letter to Hezekiah. And part of it is that Sennacherib's words is, you have no one, no one could stop us in these cities. Are your gods stronger? All these gods have failed. And the story goes on. Isaiah meets with Hezekiah, chapter 19 and 20. They meet. Isaiah comes back with a word. Hezekiah goes to the temple of God, lays out the letter that was sent him by Sennacherib, because there's only one city left, and that's Jerusalem. He says, what are we going to do? And God says, he will not shoot an arrow here. I'll send him back the same way. Isaiah comes in with that message. God doesn't speak to him from the Ark of the Covenant. Hezekiah speaks to God in the temple, and then Isaiah comes and brings the message to him. And that's recorded in chapter 19 and 20. And that's exactly what happens. There's not one arrow shot in the city. And here's some very quickly. Here's what Hezekiah does to get ready for this, to build the city up, the Hezekiah's tunnel. It's to get ready for the invasion from northern Israel. It's recorded in 2 Chronicles and 2 Kings. And there it is. This is the Gihon Springs right here. It's cut through the bedrock over here to this side of the city, like you see there. This is today, or in Jesus' time, that then became the Pool of Siloam. Here's the Gihon Springs. This is those pictures we saw last week of the Jebusite Wall. David's palace would be right here. Down here is the Gihon Springs, and this was always water. Joab with David went up into here, crawled up through this way up here, and opened the gate, and the people took the city from the Jebusites in David's time. This was not here. This is solid rock. This is all bedrock. Hezekiah is going to take this. There's even a tunnel right here that the Canaanites dug. But here it is right here, the same picture. These are all places right here. There's the natural bedrock. There's a worn shaft right here. He comes here, right here. He can crawl up there. That's this spot right here. This is Tony getting ready to go into Hezekiah's tunnel. There's the water flowing. I'll show you all this. That's Hezekiah's tunnel. Here's some more pictures. That's two old guard towers protecting the Gihon Springs. You pass through there to go to the Gihon Springs. That's what remains of the guard towers. If you go down into the ground, here's a Canaanite tunnel. This is a dry tunnel today, but they used to run water out into the Kidron Valley to water crops or something. This is a tunnel going, the Jebusites used to use this and then go up into the city to get, or drop buckets down to the Gihon Springs, but you got to go into that tunnel right there. And as you go into that tunnel, you'll see this starts to form right here. And that is, that's the Canaanite tunnel right here, if you don't mind. If you look right here, Canaanite tunnel, you look into here, you see that. But if you go down into there, you'll see right here, you go down into here and turn, you'll see that. See, you come down here where the water, you'll be standing in water, but right here's that square right there. And that now is Hezekiah's tunnel. And there's water flowing from Hezekiah. That's still flowing today. And those are all cut out tunnels. And they started cutting here and started cutting here, and they met. No one knows how they did. I mean, people have ideas, but that water flows. It's not like downhill. They cut that, and the water just flows all the time from the Yellen Springs over here. It's just a steady, you don't even know, it feels like you're walking flat. There's the water flowing there. And that's Tony inside there. It's a little bit deeper there. There's where the two tunnels met, where the guys met. That's going through the tunnel. That's a hole in the wall. That's just, you're in the wall, there's just a hole. That's for a torch. You stick a torch in there for light. Clint drew this. There's two spots right here that had wood on there that they could open and shut the gate to control the water, control it from on top. This is the sluice gate I just showed you. This is where the two shafts meet. That was cut 701 right around that time to get water, to get ready for invasion. There's Tony popping around the corner. There's me in the tunnel. That's at the end of the tunnel, and this says, when the tunnel was driven through, and this was the way in which, this is, they wrote this in Hebrew, they carved it as how they could hear each other picking, and pretty soon they broke through, hey, and then water started flowing. And that describes that event there in 701 BC. That's the Bula of Hezekiah. This now, they're at Lachish fighting. Remember, they're at Lachish fighting. This is the wall of Lachish 701. And this is where Sennacherib sent Rabshakeh over to give a message to Hezekiah that we're coming over to defeat you, Nick. You might as well give up. This is Lachish. This is where it is. These are the sling stones. Same picture there. These are in the British Museum. These are sling stones that were picked up right in this area, around this area from this battle. See, there's a city underneath there. See, it's still a tell. So there's a sea, but as they excavate this, they find all those sling stones. And that's them. And this is in Sennacherib, he went home. Because what happens, the Bible records it, I got it in the framework book, that night that Isaiah says, there won't be an arrow shot at Jerusalem, I'll send him back the same way. That night, 185 soldiers died, according to the scriptures. And Sennacherib just goes back to Assyria. Nothing happened after that. Herodotus records the same thing, but there's different accounts of why it happened. But when he goes back in his palace in Nineveh, he has, if this was the room, there's a wall there with gypsum carving. It's wall, ceiling to floor, carvings. And right there on that wall, he's sitting on a throne on a hill at Lachish. And on this side of the battle, and he's got two big standing out in front of it, protecting him. And this is on that wall. These are slingers. See the sling stones? They're fighting. This is his last battle at Lachish. He's surrounded himself with his last battle at Lachish. And there's again, those are the sling stones. Those stones right there, the action photo, were picked up at Lachish. Those stones are those stones there. And there they are again. There's the stones again. These are some more. That's again, there's the wall. That's Lachish. Right here, Azekah, Hebron, there's Jerusalem. There's Lachish from a distance. There is, again, the battle scene. There's some kind of engine with wheels on it that are rolling up like a siege tower. There's captives going away. These are torches being thrown over the wall by Israel, trying to burn the siege engine. There's archers climbing up. They're climbing up. There's the city wall, the inner gate. See, that you get all that detailed there. There's the same thing. What you see here, that is that right there. Again, the close-up of the wall. Here's some more details. There's people climbing up the ramps. There's some more battle going on right here. There's a siege tower. All kinds of things here. Here's people going off. See, they got their camels packed up, and they're being taken. There's their wagon. There's golden pedestals are being taken. These are people going into captivity. They're being deported by the Assyrians. Those are families that are leaving. This guy didn't make it. He's either being skinned alive. That's a Jew. See? Jew, someone from Judea, Assyrian helmet. You can see the beards, Judean beards, helmets. There's a pile of heads. Helmets, they're carrying heads. See, those are all Judean heads. They all got beards being carried over, throwing the pile of heads. This is what's in, this is in Sennacherib's palace where his throne room was, because after that battle he never left Assyria again, never left Nineveh again. This is him sitting. This would be right there on that part of the wall. He's sitting on his throne, people fanning him. These are Jews coming for their judgment. He's handing out judgment. Assyrian soldiers escorting someone. These are Jews back here begging for mercy because they're being escorted up for their judgment, which is then going to be probably decapitation or skinned alive or something. And that's Sennacherib in a chariot. There's some more there. That's the pool, Church of the Holy Sepulchre, Mount of Olives right here, the Dome of the Rock right here. The wall would have come right up here on this side, and this is where Hezekiah was at when they heard the message. That's where Ahaz heard the message from Isaiah. That's where Rabshakeh talked to him, right in this area. That's Hezekiah's pool at cold water. This is how the city expanded. Hezekiah's pool is on this side, so they're over in this area. There's Sargon and Sennacherib. So now Sennacherib's going to record this. He goes back and he records this. It's Sennacherib's palace prism. Sennacherib's prism. It was found in 1830, records the annals of Sennacherib of everything he did, and it records that Hezekiah paid tribute after the invasion, but never records him being defeated. It says, this is the whole thing, it's in your book right here. In my third campaign, I marched against Hatti, Louis, king of Sidon, whom the terror-inspired glamour of my lordship had overwhelmed, fled far overseas, and perished. As to Hezekiah, what'd you do to This is Sennacherib talking about Hezekiah, who we've got a bulla, who the Bible records. This is back in Nineveh on a prism that he's writing. Here's the prism. I got a picture. I got one coming here too. This is it right here. This is the prism right there. And it says, as to Hezekiah, the Jew, he did not submit to my yoke. And the Bible says Hezekiah didn't submit. Isaiah told him not to submit. But I laid siege to his strong cities. Yes, he did, all the fortified cities, his walled forts and countless small villages, and conquered by means of well-stamped earth ramps. I mean, he built up a ramp, ran siege engines up to him, describes what he actually did himself. Now, did you kill him? Did you cut off his head? Did you take his city? No. What I did to him, what I did to Hezekiah himself, I made a prisoner in Jerusalem, his royal residence, like a bird in a cage. Why'd you do that? Well, I just got him trapped in there and just left him like a bird in a cage, and then I came home. Why'd you come home? Well, you took every city except Jerusalem. Well, did you see my pictures here of Lachish? And then it's like, but what happened is Herodotus records, is it somewhere down here? There it is. That's that part right there on Hezekiah's, Sennacherib's prism. There it is again. Now, Herodotus, I think it's in the book or I passed it here, records that Sennacherib left because they woke up in the morning and all of their bowstrings were eaten by rats. Rats invaded their camp and everything, they had no weapons. And so they realized they were completely unarmed, and so they all left to go back. So Herodotus tells the same story, and then all of a sudden Sennacherib just goes back to Nineveh. Now the Bible says 185,000 soldiers died and he goes back. Herodotus says, well, we think what it was rats destroyed all their leather and all their bowstrings, and they had no weapons, and so they all just retreated back to Nineveh. So either way, Sennacherib's telling the same story, that we never took Jerusalem, and I just kept them locked up like a bird. It'd be like Putin and Trump meeting in Alaska, and then each going back and telling their side of the story. Well, they're both telling their side of the story, but they're not necessarily making themselves look bad. Sennacherib, look at my palace. Now, what ends up happening, he would not leave, and the Bible records it, and history records it. His sons conspired against him and killed him and fled, and one of them stayed and began ruling Assyria. Because, I mean, dad's gone crazy. Dad's a lunatic. He just sits in there and talks about Lachish. It's like he saw the angel of the Lord kill 185,000 people. Dad's not the same. So they had to kill him. Otherwise, the whole empire is going to collapse. This is a bull I've got downstairs from the same time period, very similar to Hezekiah's bull. This is a real one. There it is again. There's the Assyrian kings. All right, thank you for your patience. We'll pick this up next week because Assyria now is going to start to decline and Babylon is going to start rising, but it's going to take a couple hundred years for that whole thing to transpire. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into your word. We ask that we would honor you, that we would not be misled by our own culture or by false philosophies, but we ask that we would trust you as Isaiah did, as Hezekiah did, as the people of faith would follow you, that we'd not be distracted by the ways of the world. We do again thank you for your truth. We thank you for the ability to walk in your wisdom, and we thank you for your spirit and salvation. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.